What we're going to focus on today is metrics. And one of the most common things I hear from entrepreneurs is they say, well, we're just getting started. We have this idea. We don't have metrics. So we don't have any users. You know, even if you're putting up a splash page, you're going to have emails, but that's really limited to what you're going to have. So what I say to that is you can be the metric. So for example, if you are an entrepreneur and you are creating software to help the restaurant industry, perhaps you had been a server since you were 16 years old, and so you completely understand the problem. And that's really the most important thing that investors care about, is that you as the entrepreneur building the company truly understand the end user and the customer. So let's say, for example, that is your case. You're not going to have metrics because you haven't built it out, right? Not everybody has access to capital. Not everybody can just go ahead and grab $50,000 for a prototype. So you can approach an angel investor with the problem. So how to speak to investors when you have no metrics is use yourself as the metric. That they always say that investors are investing in people, right? It's all about execution. So if you can use yourself as the metric, you can communicate to this investor that, you know, hey, I have deep domain expertise. I've been waiting tables since I was 16. I got promoted to assistant manager and then manager. I paid my whole way through college waiting tables. I completely understand the whole system and what's wrong with the system and how the software actually can make it better. So right there is an example of how, if you have no metrics and you're just getting started, you can even use yourself as that metric. So with that said, let's go ahead and jump in. We're going to talk about 5 different revenue models, and we'll talk about the metrics for each one. And you'll start to notice that some of these metrics can apply to each revenue model. So the first one that we're going to talk about is our e-commerce, our e-tail. The second one we're going to talk about is SaaS subscription. The third one is retail pop-up. The fourth one is marketplace or commission. And then last but not least is the beast of ads. So that first one, if you have an e-commerce site, e-tail, whatever you want to call it, and you are selling goods, the most important metric, because remember, investors care about how money is coming in, how money is going out. So if I have an e-commerce site, I care about what is the average transaction size, what is the average order size. So I want to compare how that money is coming in to how that money is going out. So if I am building that type of company, I am looking at the average transaction size for my company. And then I'm looking at the other side of the equation, is how much is it going to cost me to get that customer? So you can have the greatest product or service in the world, but if you don't have any customers, any users, doesn't do you any good. So let's say, for example, you go out and you create a ad campaign, or you place an ad somewhere, or you sponsor somewhere, and it costs you $10,000 and you end up getting 10 customers. So your customer acquisition cost was $1,000. So that could be good and that could be bad, depends on the other side of the equation. So if we're doing e-commerce, we're doing e-tail, and the average transaction size is $250, but it costs us $1,000 to get that customer, we want to set a goal that we can make it up in a year. So let's say, for example, you're selling apparel, right? So you know that a customer comes today and he buys a pair of boots, or she buys a pair of boots. And then you know, okay, I have information about that user. I know what brands they like. I know what brands they looked at. So I know that, again, going back to the psychology of your buyer, why they buy what they buy. If somebody is buying in the winter, they're probably going to buy in the spring, in the summer, in the fall. Most people have winter outfits. You need boots, you need coats. And then spring rolls around, you need, you know, dresses or shorts or lighter tops. And then summer comes around, you need swimwear, right? So if this is the kind of site that you're running, it would be a good idea to reach back out to this customer who bought boots in the winter and perhaps suggest something from the same designer or similar designers for spring. So if you're pitching this to an investor, what you want to communicate is that, yes, we did spend $1,000 on this first customer because we're a new brand and nobody knew about us, but we're already tracking to get our money back in a year. We had somebody come in and purchase $250 in the winter, and then in the spring, we sold them something else for $250. And that's the most important way to communicate how money is coming in, how it's going out. One of the things that I always hear is LTV, lifetime value of your customers. Some people say, don't use it. Other people spend hours calculating this equation. Now, all of the metrics I'm talking about are in the free course. I'm going to go ahead and put it up. Let's see if I can do this now. I'll put it on the screen. So there's a free course called 3 Steps to Raising Capital Fast, and all of the metrics are in there. So you can go ahead and something always pops up on my screen when I'm talking. You can go ahead and go in that course, and you can see all of the different calculations for customer acquisition costs, for lifetime value, for average revenue per user, average transaction size. If you have any questions, just let me know. You can email me after you look at that, or you can go ahead and post them on the board. So we have this company. It has an average transaction size, average order size of $250, costs us $1,000 to get that customer. So we're going to communicate that we are on track to make that money back within a year. Anything longer than a year, it becomes problematic. We're seeing right now a lot of the talk about unicorns, and I like the term unicorps. I forget who coined that, but whoever it wasn't me. But I love the term unicorps, because what we're seeing right now with these unicorns is just unsustainable growth. It's a company, for give an example of what we're talking about, company spending, you know, $1,000 on acquiring a customer who's really only yielding back maybe $50, right? So that is not sustainable. We're seeing it right now in the political world. We're looking at Donald Trump with insane growth, I'd like to call it growth at all costs, where he's just throwing everything out, offending everybody. And yeah, he's doing really great right now. I would say Donald Trump is a unicorn. Everyone's talking about it. Even if you don't want to talk about him, you're still talking about him. But is that sustainable growth? Absolutely not. There's no way in the world that any sane American is going to elect this person who is pretty much alienating everybody and offending everybody. So that is a good example. If everyone can see what's going on, look at how you're building your company. Are you building your company on hype that's not sustainable? Are you going for, you know, growth at all costs? We already saw HomeJoy, which I love that company, but a lot of people said that was really growth at all costs, that you can't continue to spend lots of money acquiring the customer and then not extracting money out of that customer and then, you know, maintain a sustainable company. Historically, you know, the past 5 years or so, we've been in a boom economy. So if you're running a company like that, you can keep raising capital. But what we talked about last month, we're going into a down economy. So it's not going to be so easy to raise capital every time you realize you're running out of cash. So to summarize that, think about how money is coming in, how money is going out. In this example of e-commerce, it was the average transaction size is going to be a good measure. And then the next revenue model we're going to talk about is SaaS. And you can easily apply everything we just talked about to SaaS. So with SaaS, it's easier because you have a monthly price that, you know, for this example, you'd have to have $83 or so per month to make $1,000 a year. So you want to figure out how much did it cost me to acquire this customer and what is the monthly cost and am I going to make this money up within the 12-month period? So the whole concept of how to speak to investors is speak to investors in simple mathematical terms. I had mentioned lifetime value of the customer. So the reason people don't like lifetime value of the customer is that it's looking out 20 years. You're basically saying, what is the average purchase that this customer makes? How frequently do they make it? And how many years is this customer going to be with me? So you can say it's a $20 purchase, happens once a month, and it's for 20 years. So you are forecasting out 20 years worth of revenue for this customer, but really what you care about is what happens in the first 12 months. So in Lean Finance for Startups, we do a financial model, and I always stress that your financial model should be 24 months. The first 2 years are monthly. And then anything beyond 2 years, if you want to do 3 or 4 or 5, it should always be annualized because you don't have visibility. So if you're forecasting granular data for year 5, you're really just wasting your time. So really focus on what's happening right now, the next 12 months, the next 24 months, because an investor who's writing you a check, he or she wants to know, okay, I'm going to give you this money. Explain to me what you're going to do with it. And it helps if you can say, I've already run these campaigns and I know that I can get a customer for $1,000. And I know that customers come to our site and spend on average $250. And I know from patterns that they come back every quarter. So do you see where I'm going with this? That you want to be able to show a pattern, basic mathematical, don't worry about LTV calculations, just straightforward. How did the money come in? How did that money come out? And most importantly is the why, right? It's the thing behind the thing. So I explained for an apparel company, they are going to come back every quarter because it's seasonal, right? So you might be doing something different. You want to tap into the pattern of, you know, why somebody is coming to your site. So another metric that you can look at is the average revenue per user. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the ad base section. But that's another good indicator. So the average revenue per user that's coming into your site, can also be used. So that is our e-tail e-commerce, and that is our SaaS. Another piece of this is your churn. So your churn is going to tell you what percentage of people are leaving your site. And again, the number is important. The number that you have, you know, you want to have, you know, 5% or below, and you want to be trending lower. So you want to be able to show an investor that, hey, we started out with a churn of 5% or even like 10%, but we were able to decrease that. And the way that we were able to decrease that is we did X, Y, and Z. So for example, it's easier if you're a monthly subscription because you can see when people cancel the subscription. But if you're not a monthly and say you're e-commerce, you can say, all right, we expect a purchase every quarter, every season. And if someone hasn't purchased in two seasons, then we're going to call them a churn. But what investors care mostly about is that you can go to them and say, yeah, you know, we had some churn. And when we reached out to these people, we offered them, you know, 50% off coupon or whatever that was to come back. We got some data from them. What we learned was that people stopped coming if things were sold out. You know, flash sales were very common a while ago. Sometimes people get frustrated with flash sales. They say, you know what, I don't want to get excited about buying something and then I can't get it. So try to figure out, first of all, you know, what's a good churn for your industry. And I have some stats in the free course that you can look at. And then figure out how to get that lower. You know, what is it that would keep customer, would make a customer leave, and what would get them to come back? So that's an important aspect. Your churn is really just the inverse of your retention. So now that you understand why people are coming and going, it also can help you increase your average transaction size or your average revenue per user. And let's say, for example, in the first example we used, you started out really small. You were getting like $100 in average transactions and average order sizes. You can use the same technique of like going back and figuring out, you know, what gets the customer to buy. I'll give you an example. If someone's on your site and they're about to check out, if you can put up a pop-up window that says, increase your order to $500 and get free shipping. See how many people take that order or that offer. If you can say, you know, buy one, get one free on a certain designer, and then, you know, see how many people take that offer. So that's another way that you can communicate to an investor that you understand why customers are buying more on your site, you understand why they're leaving your site, and you understand how to get them to come back. So that's really the most important thing. And you probably already noticed that most of what I'm talking about is basic arithmetic. I think that people are afraid of finance because they feel like, oh, it's so hard, and I see this LTV, and I'm supposed to understand this, and I have to understand all these mathematical calculations, and you actually don't. The most important thing about building a company is how many comes in, how many goes out, and hopefully you're understanding how to increase the money that comes in and how to the amount that comes, how to get your customers for cheaper. You're understanding how to upsell your customers to get your orders more. So those were our first two. That was our e-tail e-commerce, and then our second one was our SaaS subscription model. And the third one is, which I think is really a great model, is retail pop-ups. So a lot of people don't believe in retail because they think retail's dead. I talked before about Warby Parker, about Bonobos. They have pop-up shops. So if you have a physical product that you can actually sell to people, what you don't want to do is you don't want to go into a store. So you should not be looking at retail space and figuring out, okay, how can I get a store space? What you want to do, and you can look at Warby Parker and Bonobos, they went in other stores first, right? So Bonobos was in Nordstrom's, and Warby Parker started their own little, before they started their own little shops, they were in boutiques. So Britain Co. is a company, if you're not familiar with them, they're kind of a Martha Stewart for the millennials. They have pop-up shops, and they have one right now on Union Street in San Francisco. If you are interested in doing retail, you should definitely check out any pop-up shop you can find. You know, go spend your weekend scouring pop-up shops and start to see what really works. Apple, of course, is the big granddaddy of companies, and I would say the scale is about 6,000 sales per square foot to 300. So if I'm Apple, I'm making 6,000 dollars per square foot. If I am something like Old Navy or Ross or something like that, I'm getting about $300 per square foot. So when you're talking to investors about your pop-up shop, your customer acquisition cost is going to be your actual retail space. You never want that space to be any more than 10% of what's coming in. So you want to calculate out, I just told you what the ranges were. So if you're a lower end store, you're going to be about $300 per square foot. If you're a high-end store, you're selling, you know, virtual reality goggles or some kind of electronics, you're going to be higher. You're going to be about 6,000 or 3,000. So keep that in mind when you find your pop-up space, because what you don't want to do is get into an expensive pop-up space, which is your customer acquisition cost, right? So you're in an expensive space and you're selling, I don't know, $20 hoodies, because the numbers aren't going to work for you. So again, going back to how to speak to investors, if you tell an investor that you have a pop-up shop, and let's say it costs you $20 per square foot to get in there, but you're selling $500 per square foot, then that's a pretty good metric. So retail is not dead, but just learn how to measure your retail progress and your growth and be able to articulate that to an investor. Now, the last two are our marketplace or commission and our ad base. So marketplace and commission has a pro and a con. So I would say the pro is that if you are just getting started and you want to put yourself in a marketplace, it's great because they do a lot of the advertising for you. So the con, the negative of that, is that you don't have the data. So if you are trying to communicate with an investor about why people come to your site, how they get there, it's going to be a little bit harder. So I would say if you're going to do something on marketplace commission, just keep that in mind that you're not going to always have the best data. So an example of somewhere where you kind of have to be there is Apple. So Apple is essentially a marketplace. So you're spending 30% of what the commission is that Apple takes off the top. And that's the cost of doing business with Apple. So sometimes you can't get around it. You're not going to say, I don't want to be on Apple. I'm going to create my own platform. Of course, you're going to go with Apple. You're going to go with Google Play to get your stuff out there. So marketplace commission is a great place to start. Marketplace commission is low cost because a lot of times you put something up, you know, eBay is a good example. And you're not spending all the dollars advertising it. You're being able to piggyback on that larger platform. And the last one we're going to do is we're going to talk about ads. And I touched a little bit on ads, average revenue per user. And I think that's the hardest one. And it's funny because ads are really tough to do, but they're easy. It's an easy model to employ. So I can say right now, I'm going to put up a site and it's going to be ad based. So meaning pretty much I don't have to really collect any money from the customer. I just have to put something up there that users are going to come to and they're going to sign up. You know, Facebook and Twitter are great companies to look at because there's so much data. So if I'm Facebook, I'm doing like $10 average revenue per user. If I'm Twitter, I'm doing like $5 average revenue per user. So companies like Facebook and Twitter are great examples of companies that just put up a platform and allowed everyone to come on for free, then had to wait to, you know, put the ads up. So for example, with Twitter, they raised about $1 billion before they were profitable. Actually, before they IPO'd, and when they IPO'd, they weren't even profitable. With Facebook, they raised over $300 million, and they were profitable when they IPO'd. But so those are the kind of numbers. If you are going to put up a site and say to investors, yeah, we're going to just get ads. An investor's mind, he or she is thinking, okay, that's several hundred, maybe even $1 billion worth of capital to get that site up and running. So don't be fooled by, oh, ads are so easy, you know, I just create something and then everyone's going to pay me, you know, like for example, YouTube, somebody will pay $500,000 to be on YouTube's homepage for 24 hours. You're not YouTube. And in order to get to that size, it's very capital intensive. So really keep that in mind when you're thinking that I'm just going to throw something up there and I'm just going to do ads. Well, that's fine. But just understand that ads are really expensive because you have to build out the platform to get it there. And so last but not least, what I want to touch on is another thing I always hear is that it's harder for women to get funded. And it must be harder for women to get funded because fewer women are funded. So I would say to that, I personally do not believe it's harder for women to get funded. I personally believe that if you have a great product or service and you're getting traction, you know, you're getting traction, you're getting, like the example I used earlier, you're spending $1,000 per customer and you're getting that $1,000 a year. If you can demonstrate those numbers to an investor, then you have just as great of a chance as any man who's building the same company. And I would even say if you're doing something in fashion apparel, you know, mostly it's women who are excited about fashion, so you're going to have a leg up. And that's not to say that women can only build companies that are, you know, women focused, but I believe that there's a big opportunity and building companies for things that women want. So never, ever, ever believe that it's harder for you because you're a woman. You have the same access to technology as men. You know, go out and create something great have great numbers, present those numbers to an investor. And again, what I said in the very beginning, if you're just getting going, you don't even have the first $5,000 to start, and say you're 22 years old and you just graduated, always use yourself as the metric, because investors are investing in people, right? And it's just, you heard a gazillion times, it's not the idea, it's the execution. So if you are a hardworking person and you've been waiting tables since you were 16 years old, and you're gonna create this software for the hospitality industry and you know so much about it, then you are a perfect candidate and your chances of being successful and getting seed capital are very high. So what I don't like to hear is like, oh, I don't have the money to start, or I'm a female and I don't see lots of females doing it. I think the reason we don't see lots of females doing it is because they don't choose to do it, but it's not because women can't do it, because there's an evil male investors who don't want to invest in it. It's totally not true. I have been advising companies, gosh, on my own for about 8 years, so I know lots of male investors and female investors, and I can tell you, guarantee you, that a male investor will invest in a female entrepreneur if she has great numbers, great traction, she's solving a real problem, and she can articulate it. So I believe that if you go into an investor meeting thinking that your chances are very low, and this investor probably doesn't even like women, well, your confidence isn't gonna be up, and you're not gonna portray the kind of person that can really execute. So don't believe all the hype about male investors or even female investors not investing in female entrepreneurs. You have just as good of a chance if you have a great product or service and you have good traction. And so I'll end with that. And I will say that any of the things that we talked about today that are confusing, like customer acquisition costs, LTV, average revenue per user, average transaction size, churn, which are the ones that we talked about. Any of the metrics we talked about, they're all in that free course, which is just, I think, now above my head. So go ahead and enroll in that. And then in 30 days from today is our boot camp. So boot camp is a course that we do as coach. So in doing all these courses, I realized that lots of people dropped out. They say 10% of people who enroll in online courses actually finish them. So that's 90% who don't finish them. So with boot camp, we all work together. So that's January 12th, 30 days from today. You guys can check that out too. And if you just go to our website, financeforentrepreneurs.co, you can see all the other YouTube channels that we have up there and the other broadcasts from this Finance for Entrepreneurs broadcast. And always, always, always send me questions. I always get your questions. If you send me through financeforentrepreneurs.co, or if you send me an email on YouTube or Thinkific, I always, always get your email. So I will respond to you directly within 12 hours. And if I don't respond to you, send me another email.